I have a question for Saul. Is this working? If I'm not incorrect, the clapping bodies was syncopated. So in that case, they weren't really clapping to the dance, but to the music. Do you disagree with that?
No, don't answer.
Oh, okay. Well, just, I'm sorry.
These were collecting questions, but I'll answer later.
Okay, so I'd like Saul and everybody actually to comment on the distinction between improvised and non-improvised is more and more complicated the more talks we're hearing, because everybody has slightly different presumptions about what counts as what. And it seemed to me, Saul, in your part, the improvised, non-improvised part, the part that you were considering non-improvised by some dimensions is absolutely still improvised, just in a different way. And so I'm wondering, it seems like there's a dimension of how much constraint and structure there is that is shared amongst people, and that could, even with the string quartet, be quite improvised, and how much, even though they're all playing the same notes, they're moving and breathing differently this time. So it would be great to hear everybody say a bit about how they are thinking about improvisation.
Just to add one sentence, because I had the same question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. It actually also follows up a little bit Michael's question, but so there was this kind of, for me, there was the notion of transition, change, came up in all three talks, especially the first and the last, and I'm also wondering with respect to the more, to me, more like, let's say, continuous task of improvisation, maybe are those two kinds of things we are looking at, one of these kind of like, where we construct together movement in a continuous way, and then those transitions that seem to suggest questions of structure. And so to what extent are those just things we should study apart? Are they leading one into another? Like, how do we, I think this is for all three of you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, whether, just an additional sentence maybe, whether non-improvisation is an essential part of improvisation.
First, Uriya.
I have two questions, actually. One following up on Tommy's talk, I was wondering what happens to the co-confident effect when motor difficulty increases, and I would expect that it gets lost at some point. Also, judging from observations, I, among other things, study contact improvisation dancers, and there are particular junctures where things get dangerous and difficult when they resort to ready-mades, basically. Just because of that, I would think, at least. The other point on transitions, responding to Saul's talk, I think it would be really interesting to see what happens when people change from ready-mades to improvisations. In the micro timing at the transitional juncture, and I guess Ashley would be the right person to answer that question.
First of all, we can take another 15 minutes. We'll push lunch a bit, 1:15, because it's a very strong discussion. So we have time for it, no worry.
Each of you will be able to respond for, say, 7 minutes or something.
We will continue.
Make sense to you guys? Do you integrate with the questions? I'm preparing you.
Whoa.
And then, just as a participant, I want to wonder, so for me, improvisation has to do about this axis of going from chaos to order, uncertainty to known, and I was impressed all with this moment when they jump together, and I wonder how much do you think it's related to this axis, maybe to this confident, cohesitant switch?
I think my comment pertains to all of you, but mainly to Ashley and Saul. And I'm wondering about the role of the audience. For example, how can we measure the same thing if it's an audience that does not dance Lindy Hop and is not familiar with the steps or with the structure? And for Ashley, I'm thinking, what happened when you perform this in live performance, and how that responsibility of the performer is there to actually tailor something or present something, and what happened there in between, I'm by myself in a studio trying something, or when there is something I need to present.
Mainly for Tommy, because you have nice quantitative data. When you look at the joint leadership, at least in the one example that you've shown us, it seems like the switch of roles is somewhat stable. And I wonder if this is across couples and whether there is sort of a some sort of a meta contract of sort of deciding what is the rhythm of changing leadership.
So the question is, when two biological motions start together, there will be some incidental overlapping movement. But I think that's not what we mean by synchronization, or like using those incidental overlapping is not really something we want to extract to quantify joint improvisation. So other than counting the, like even any two random people put together doing joint action, there will be some overlapping. So other than just counting the coefficient, what will be a really reasonable chance level to compare? Because I think 0% is not reasonable. But then how to find that reasonable chance level as a comparison baseline?
I wonder about the mirror game. In manners of mouth mirror game and voice, like two people mirroring each other's mouth and bringing out voice, because I have this intuition that there might be a phenomena of synchronization that can be heard when the movement is coming with the voice. There's two aspects, and the voice brings some kind of synchronicity that can be like heard by anyone, maybe.
Thank you. I want to invite some people who have not yet spoken in the question period in all this conference. I'd like to hear your voice, and we're going to not proceed until one of you ask a question now. So if you haven't said anything yet, we want to hear your voice. Thank you.
So it's more like about discreteness and continuousness in the dynamics. So in the turn taking, there are like discrete steps, but to what extent there is a rhythmicity in this turn taking, and different modality or different type of interaction leads to different dynamics of that.
I wanted to. I'm wondering about the role actually of the term joint inside the joint improvisation. As someone can do an improvisation by himself and reach a state which is particularly harmonious into what he's maybe creating, but by doing it in a joint mode, you get to some kind of acceleration. Maybe through what Etty was saying, this non-improvisation part. So I am joining his question.
Thank you. That's good to reinforce.
I don't really want to ask a question because I'm not so fluent in English, and I don't really like to be like nearly forced to ask a question. But I will be goodwill. Okay. So thank I will you. Be in the same the same mood as everyone. The question is about the experimentation and if the scientific experimentation could be described as a performance.
And let's take one last question. Who will be our last question?
I would like to ask all three speakers what in a way stayed immeasurable or the hardest measure in all of your three researches or experiments. What was like the essence of the immeasurable?
The immeasurable.
Yes, exactly.
Great way to finish the question. So now we'll have 7 minutes each, okay? And let's do it in reverse order, okay? So it'll be Ashley, okay, sorry for cold call. Tommy, yeah. And then...
Okay. So I guess first of all, more generally respond to the issue of improvisation.
So I'm going to, sorry, there's five minutes each.
Oh, okay. Microphone.
in response to the improvisation versus non-improvisation, Saul referenced a book called by David Sudnell called Ways of the Hand, and I think it's a more phenomenological description of learning how to improvise jazz and how you learn those scales, and then there seems to be this qualitative shift of when you don't feel like you planned the movements of your hand, they're just sort of moving on their own, and some other people have written about that experience also. And so I think that, and also relates to Patrick's discussion of it being constituted in the interaction and not a predefined mental state. So I think that if anyone, I think that would be a good resource for that question. As far as transitioning between improvisation and non-improvisation, and defining these transition points, at least with complex dynamical systems, there's a lot of information in the interaction, and so deciding which of that, so how you define a state of the system, there's usually one variable that drives changes in the system, and that was the most challenging thing for me in response to your question, is there doesn't seem to be one informational variable that is more or less important. And so that's why I turned to listener evaluations to define the transition points that I wanted to look at. And so that sort of leads into, I think it's Ella's question, about in my experiment if they were performing live, and then also the comment about the scientific experiment as a performance itself, because I definitely experienced that. Sorry. I have these musicians, and they're used to performing for their professors in a music school, and then I bring them into this science lab, and it's kind of this weird setup, and I don't, it's not very explicit about my musical background, and so I actually had to very intentionally think about how I responded to what they were playing, because they would definitely seek sort of confirmation that they were performing the experiment the way I'd expected them to. But I also didn't want to affect the choices that we were making. So it was sort of its own little behavior setting where I needed to understand how to replicate replicate an instance where they are using their performance skills, but that it's not so novel that I can't relate it to other things in the literature. So. And I really loved it, and they really enjoyed it too, so I definitely think it was its own little experiment, its own behavior setting. And what I actually found, and I think this is different in the performance context that I created, is that in the post-interviews they would talk a lot about empathy and what it means to listen. And of course they're like facing each other, and they're, exchanging leader-follower roles, and that's the thing, another thing that I've had a hard time measuring, is how they describe that they're, so there's a few ways to show that you're listening musically. You can repeat exactly what someone says. You can take what they said and change it a little bit, or you can play completely against it. So you can play something that's completely different, but it shows that you're listening. And so as far as creating an analysis that captures that or quantifies that, that is something that I think is an interesting challenge, and trying to understand, especially because in my pairs, a lot of them had, there was usually a really huge difference in skill level, and so one of them would talk about how they adjusted their playing to let the other person sort of exchange with them. And so that's definitely the thing that I would love to talk about the most with my data.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay. So we turn now to Tommy, get to respond to this.
Can I get the microphone?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thanks for the very challenging questions. There's quite a lot to go through. I'll start from those that were kind of more directed to my study. So they came up in a number of questions, this kind of issue of transitions, changes of roles, different kinds of drifts and shifts. And I agree that definitely has to be a focus of more research. How the dynamics of that work. We have always, when we've been doing these interaction things, no matter what the kind of context is, we've always tried to also somehow not just to use these summary measures of looking at how what was the correlation coefficient for this performance, but always try to kind of unpack that, the temporal dynamics of it. And it's extremely important, and it gives a lot of information on what's going on, whether it's about making a story together one word at a time, of which we just recently published a paper, or whether it's this dancing together, whether it's these movements together, whether it's playing music together. And kind of a direct response to this mirror study, that different pairs were somewhat different in this, so they were not all exhibiting exactly the same pattern, but it's kind of very close to that. So some of the participants reported afterwards that they had these turns that they were taking, that it was they felt that there was a clear switch between me leading for the first 10 seconds and then this other person leading for the next 10 seconds. However, we don't see that in the data. So all the switches in the data are much more fast. They are much faster than what they report that they experienced. So the mutual adaptation that you kind of, even if you are the kind of leader, you are still following what the other person or adapting what the other person is doing, that's probably clouding that analysis of the dynamics. So it's a little bit difficult to get into that unless you directly experiment on that particular thing, and that's one of our on the to-do list. Try to kind of give them, let's say, indicate by some signal that they are supposed to change roles, for instance, and then we can start looking at what's going on in the transitions. And then I'd just like to say to Miriam that that's an excellent experiment idea with voice and mouth movement mirroring. That's really perfect, really cool. And then to the questions on experiment as performance and how the scientific studies, how in which ways they are different from what you actually see, let's say, out in the wild. And that's, of course, we are limited by our laboratories, by what we can measure, what we can record, and what we can analyze, and all these kinds of things. This is especially painful if you need to use any kind of brain imaging or brain measurement equipment, because it's just crazy how many constraints that brings to you. But we have, at least in our lab, we have in multiple different ways tried to work towards more naturalistic settings. So one of them, instead of just using plain old beeps and boops for the auditory system or some predetermined pictures for the visual, we have full movies and proper music, for instance, presented. So that's for brain studies. And then, of course, we try to get this social interaction also in the brain studies. So one of our systems, where I didn't show you any data from, but one of the systems is a two MEG system, where two people are in two separate MEG labs and they can interact with each other. So we can measure both of their brains, but they can be in live interaction and do all kinds of fun things. So that's kind of going towards bringing the kind of scientific measurement to situations and having our participants do things that are quite natural what they do. But that's also, I think that's also the immeasurable part. That you don't quite know how far you are from that really natural thing and how much the participants are constrained by your situation. I think that's we always try to interview our participants afterwards, but it's quite difficult to always see in, you know, all those different ways in which we have constrained their behavior, and that's the immeasurable and difficult part. Thanks. Thank you.
Right, well, I'll start with that. Gosh, there's a lot out there, so this would be a sort of full-on rant. I think the distinction is the provocation I was making, in a way, is that I do think that you're right, that all performance is improvisation, because the distinctions that we're making maybe is more between inscribed and non-inscribed practices, where there is some measurable register against which you might choose to evaluate the outcome. Which you do have in a notated musical form, but I was on a panel yesterday at Trinity Laban where they had this session on formalizing the informal, where I was with a b-boy, another Lindy Hopper, and this guy from Wren Music, which is this southeast of England, sea shanty, kind of full-on folky, oral tradition music junkie. And it was an amazing experience to talk with these other people who had quite a lot in common, actually, because these are all oral traditions. So in a way, I think that's why I tried to raise the issue about the definitional approach to improvisation having this problematic, rather ethnocentric structure, which isn't borne out by ethnomusicological studies, which tend not to differentiate between music and dance in most cultures and where there aren't these inscribed practices. So I think it's not an answer that I'm providing, it's just a sense that through the practices that are constitutive in that particular environment of a moment of more or less familiarity that is oriented to by the participants, we're not going to be able to measure it in any kind of absented way. We're going to have to get a little bit, just look for observable regularities in patterns of activity, and I think rhythm is one of those. So it's, I think, really, I was trying to be a bit provocative. Anyway, the other part of that, and I think this speaks to a few of the different questions, is normativity and social actions. And I think that the question of what is measurable and immeasurable really boils down to what is public and what is interactional. So when you have people interacting in some way where there's some accountability for error, and this is something Pat pointed out to me last week, which is that in situations where you're measuring something without necessarily dealing with what is obviously relevant to people who have their own system for evaluating whether something's gone right or wrong, and I think that's there in your study of jazz improvisers as well. They kind of dissect the performance afterwards and go, no, that was rubbish, or this was great, or whatever. And that's, I think, part of the post hoc accounting for these practices. I think that's one way of looking at it. Another is to try and find some metric embedded in their activities where you can see an awkwardness or a sort of phenomenological breakdown happening. And that provides us with some insight as to how these activities are structured. I guess the other thing that I wanted to say something about was the turn-taking and the sort of modality question that I think is involved in lots of these different experiments, is that there isn't, I maybe have a rather conservative idea of what turn-taking is because I'm kind of steeped in conversation analysis, which insists it's some form of phrasal or clausal unit, and that it has all these specific talky practices associated with it. But actually, bodies in motion don't have those kinds of constraints, and that, again, goes back to this question of what are the constraints of these kinds of practices and the modalities that they use. So I think it's a mistake to look at these things in terms of turn-taking until we understand what is accountable as a unit and what constitutes an initiation and a response, and where do you see those breakdowns occurring? And I think that goes really to the heart of this, which is that all of these structures are, in a sense, they're Wittgensteinian language games, and they have to be constituted through practice, and then they can be contravened through practice. And if we don't recognize that those structures evolve in situ, then maybe we can't make that distinction in a very clear way.
Thank you very much. Let's thank the speakers for...